Samsung ready to launch a new phone, and it's not the Fold, the new app that lets you stream all of your local channels for free. Walmart has a $64 tablet, and my opinion of it might surprise you. We're going to take a trip down memory lane with the Walkman and answer your pressing tech questions. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMuro. This is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about the stuff I think you should know about happening in the tech world. Plus, as you know, I answer your tech questions. Producer Megan is on vacation this week, so I will be handling the entire show solo this time around. And I say we just jump right into things. We've got Samsung with their announcement that their next event will be happening August 7th in New York City. They call these Unpacked events. I got the invitation. It's happening at the same place it happened last year. I feel like I was just in New York showing off the Note 9, but now we're going to see the Note 10. Well, we think we're going to see the Note 10. They don't necessarily say what they're going to unveil at these things, but we're pretty sure it's the Note 10. The invitation was a stylus that was animated, showing a stylus kind of touching what looks to be a camera that was centered on a white background. So this, of course, made people speculate what that could mean. Is there a centered selfie cam? Are there four cameras? Is there a camera on the stylus? We don't know. But what we do know about the Note 10 and the Note in general is that this is where Samsung unveils all of their latest and greatest technology. All the innovations happen on the Note 10 or the Note, and then they trickle down into the Samsung Galaxy S line. Now, this is a little bit different, and this is kind of an awkward situation for Samsung because they've got the Galaxy Fold, which is kind of a failure to launch. So they tried to launch that a couple months back. That didn't work. They recalled it from reporters that they sent it out to, and they kind of did some more work on it. And I'm seeing reports that say they've figured out the problem. They've made this hinge work better. They've made it so the hinge does not impact the screen on that device. So they're ready to relaunch it. But are they going to do that now right before the August 7th event? I mean, they only have 4 weeks to do that. So this is kind of an awkward situation for Samsung. Not sure what they're going to do or how they're going to handle this. Maybe they'll launch both devices at the same time at the event. So they'll tell us what happened with the Fold and explain that and apologize. And then, of course, launch the Note 10 as well. But last year's Note 9 was an expensive device, over $1,000. And I think we're going to see that same thing happen here. But what can they add to the Note 10 to make it crazier, to make it better? I mean, the cameras have gotten so good on these devices. I mean, clearly there's always room for improvement with the cameras, though, to make them even better at foolproof pictures. The screens are just phenomenal at this point. Battery life, I mean, if you have a Note, you've got such a large battery in there. The battery life isn't even an issue. So what could they do to really make this thing better? I don't know. Could they make the stylus better? Could they make software better? Could they make the camera lenses even crazier? So maybe get 4 or 5 holographic screens and longer batteries. That's what I'm saying we need on these new devices. But who knows? So we'll see. Samsung, again, Unpacked event happening August 7th in New York City, Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And I get excited over these things, even though these launches have not got... The excitement of these launches has sort of toned down over the years because people know it's another phone. There's a lot of leaks before it is unveiled, but I still get excited because it's still fun to actually see the device that these companies have been working on for a while and to actually see it in reality. So I'm looking forward to that one. All right, so let's take a question. This is from Nelly. This is from Nelly on, let's see, she just emailed me. She says, hey, Rich, can you tell me about WhatsApp taking out of service people with old phones? I have a Samsung S5. And this took me, I had to do a little research on this because I didn't see anything about this. I haven't heard of WhatsApp, but I guess if you're using WhatsApp, maybe you got a notification or something, but here's the deal. So I did some research and here's what I found. WhatsApp is apparently dropping support for older phone models. And anytime that you have a headline like this and an app like WhatsApp, which a lot of people use, not so much in the US. I mean, if you have an international friend, you probably use it. But in the US, iMessage is king when it comes to messaging. But internationally, WhatsApp is very, very strong and very prevalent. So clearly, this is happening, and it's happening, let's see, it's happening February 1st, 2020. So you have some time, but you've got The recommended requirements for WhatsApp is Android 4.0, which is super old, iOS 8 Plus, which is super old, and Windows Phone 8.1. So WhatsApp will no longer support phones running Android 2, Windows Phone 8, iPhone 3GS, and iOS 6, and BlackBerry OS and BlackBerry 10. So the reality is, especially for you, Nelly, you said you have a Samsung S5. You are going to be just fine. They're not taking away support for the S5 anytime soon. I think the reality is with this update is that they just want WhatsApp to run and be able to do everything it can do smoothly on a variety of phones. And some of these older phones, with the especially with the security and stuff, they're just not supporting the newer features. But you're talking really old phones here. I mean, Android 2, I don't even know. I mean, when did that launch? I mean, that had to be a long, long time ago. I mean, I don't even know when that was, but yeah, that's a while ago. So you're going to be just okay. All right. So what happened, man, this was wild. If you were following things or tried to access social media, depending on when you listen to this, this happened yesterday, but you know, you probably have it in recent memory, but Facebook, Instagram, and other social networks all went down, including WhatsApp, and also Facebook Messenger. And they all went down. This was on Wednesday, July 3rd. They went down for a really long time. And I know how I figured this out. I was trying to upload a story to Instagram, and it was for my niece whose birthday it was. And I kept, you know, uploading the story, and it just would not work. I was uploading a picture, and I was convinced it was the phone. I was using an Android device, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. This, I can't believe this doesn't work. Watch how easy this is on the iPhone. And I switched to my iPhone, and the same thing happens. I got an upload failed, and I was like, okay, well, clearly it's not these things. Then I checked my Wi-Fi, and I said, okay, well, maybe I'm on corporate Wi-Fi. Maybe that's not working. Turn that off. Nope. Still didn't load. Okay, well, maybe Verizon's having a problem. Maybe the Verizon network's not working. All these things until I do a quick little search on Twitter and find out that, yes, a lot of people were having problem with Instagram and Facebook. Again, this was early in the morning. You know, I'm on the early news, so I discovered this early. And then clearly throughout the day, it just kept going and going and going. And so what did people see? They saw blank pictures. You couldn't scroll. Your likes and all that stuff wasn't being updated. Now, this wasn't something where it was totally out 100%. Some things and some aspects still worked, and they worked intermittently. But overall, a lot of people had trouble accessing these social networks. So The Next Web did a great little article about how to know if this is happening. So if I was smart, I would have gone right to Facebook's developer dashboard, which is what they recommend. And if you want to get that, you can just Google Facebook developer dashboard, and it gives you a status update of everything that's going on. And the reason why they have this, it's not really for regular people, but regular people can use it. It's for app developers. So if you have an app and something's a little wonky with the app, you can go to the app dashboard and see, or sorry, the developer, let's see, first you can head to, yeah. So you can go to the developer dashboard and kind of see, hey, what's going on here? Like, what's going on? Platform status, it's called. And so Facebook platform is healthy since 10 hours ago. So clearly things were messed up. And it gives you a history of the downtime and what happened. And it said degraded performance across platform resolved. And so that was the big issue there. Twitter has a developer status board for its APIs. Then there's a website called Down Detector. You probably see this quoted in the news a lot. Down Detector kind of just sees what people are doing with various websites and if it's working. And I guess it pings the websites regularly and just figures out if people are having problems with them. But you can go on there and see a little line of if people are having trouble with accessing some of these services. And they give some of the big services: Spectrum, Verizon, Comcast, T-Mobile, Sprint, Cox, Snapchat, Google, YouTube. Everything is pretty much represented on there. So you can figure out if it's me and not you, or if it's them and not you, I should say. By the way, there's also apple.com. This is a good one. If your iMessage isn't working or something's a little crazy on your iPhone, you can go to apple.com/support/system status. And that's a good one because it tells you what's going on with all of your stuff on your iPhone. So system status. And so you can see if iMessage is working. I mean, it has everything. So there's a green dot if things are working properly, but it's everything from Apple TV to Beats 1 to iMessage to Siri to map search, to maps traffic. So again, these are good little tools to know about in case you have a problem with something and you can actually see if it's you. There used to be, I used to use this thing called like down for everyone or just me. That's a good one. Down for everyone or just me. And now you go to that website and you type in something like Snapchat. And then it says, is Snapchat down right now? Nope, it's just you. Snapchat is up. So it actually checks the website for you to see if it's down for everyone or if it's just you. So if it's just you, you know that there's something wrong with your internet connection or your setup and not the setup of the servers on their end. Oh, sorry, wrong one. Doing the show myself today. This is what happens, folks. All right, this message comes in from Nada David. She said, mentioned on KFI this morning. So you guys know I do a segment on KFI on Tuesday morning and Wednesday morning. Tuesday morning, I'm on with Bill Handel at 8, it's 8 a.m. And then on Wednesday, I'm on with Jennifer Jones Lee at 5:20 a.m., right before I go on KTLA. So I talk about, you know, all the stuff in the news happening in the tech world there as well. It's a lot of fun. So if you're listening to KFI, you hear me there. I get a lot of people that come up to me and say, oh, I hear you on KFI. So a lot of people listen to that. Okay, so Nada David said, hello, I cannot find this on your website, but this morning you mentioned an app that can be downloaded to watch local TV channels for free. Would you please send me the name of that app? The app is called Locast, and I discovered this. I saw an article in, I think it was TV News Check, one of the TV industry websites that I read on a daily basis, and it just had a small mention for this Locast.org. But it mentioned that you can stream your local channels and that it launched in LA. I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I went and I checked it out, and sure enough, KTLA is on there, which is really rare because KTLA is not on any of the streaming services. So did a little research and found out that this operates kind of how this other service used to operate called, what was it, Aereo? And this was a service that they were called exactly, Aereo Antenna. Aereo. And so what they did, this is really interesting. So this was a company back in the day that would set up like a farm of tiny little antennas on a roof and then take each one of the feeds from those antennas and stream it to people and sell them service so they can get all their local channels for whatever it was, $5, $6, $7, $8 a month. Well, the cable companies and the TV companies were like, not so fast. That's not really how this works. And so they actually shut down that company. So now Locast is taking a different approach. This is a nonprofit and they're doing this as, quote, a public service so that people who cut the cord and don't have an antenna can still watch their local channels. How long is this going to last? I don't know. But it seems legit. The guy who's running it is a former executive with some TV companies and cable companies. So it seems legitimate. Will it last? I'm not sure. But at this point, it works, and it works really well. So you can download the Locast app for Fire TV, Apple TV, the iPad, the iPhone, Android. It works across pretty much everything. And you log in, you create a sign up, they beg you and beg you and beg you to donate $5 a month or more to help the service run. And after a little 15-second spot to help you, you know, to ask you to donate, next thing you know, you are watching the local channel. So again, this works for all the local channels in LA, including like the dot channels, which I call like, you know, like 5.1, 4.2, 11.3, whatever they have, those are there as well. And so it works. It's nice. The picture's in HD. It seems legitimate. And I don't have a use for it because I've got an antenna along with Amazon TV Fire Recast TV. But it is a great thing to have, and it's really simple. So again, you do have to sign up though. And some people said that, you know, I was getting some feedback because I put this video on my Instagram at Rich on Tech, and I got some feedback from folks and they were saying that, oh, it only works for 15 minutes and then they bug you again. So I don't know. I'm not watching this thing for a long period of time. So I have no idea how, if they limit you to say, you know, a couple hours a week before you have to pay or donate. But again, check it out if you want. It's Locast, Locast.org is the website. If you have one of those Amazon Echo devices, you might be wondering just how long that Amazon keeps the things that you say to you know who. I'm not going to say her name. I don't want to activate her in all of your houses. But a congressperson, let's see, a Democrat senator, Chris Coons, sent a letter to Amazon asking how long voice recordings and transcripts are kept when you talk to this device. And guess what the answer was? They keep them forever unless you delete them. So the thing is, a lot of us now that we have these microphones in our homes, we've got these phones that are tracking us everywhere we go. America and the world at large is sort of having a better understanding. We're just, privacy is at the forefront. Now, in Europe, they've got these crazy laws that are very strict about privacy, and a lot of that is trickling down into America because they're shining the light on these tech companies over there because they have to. But then Americans are saying, oh, interesting. I didn't know that was happening. I didn't know that was going on. And so we may not have the same types of laws here, but people have a heightened awareness here because of the fact that things are happening over there regulation-wise. So we understand, you know, we just have a better understanding over here. So the thing about Amazon, so if you do delete the recordings, the other thing is that the transcripts are still kept, which is kind of odd. So even if you, let's say, you know, you said something to your Echo and you say, okay, I want to get that out of the system, and you delete that using Amazon's website, the transcript of that is still kept seemingly indefinitely. And so why do they keep that? Well, they use that for training purposes to see when you asked, you know, your Echo a certain thing, did they respond in the right way? And so they have people that go through these transcripts to see what you said and how the device responded. And apparently a lot of those transcripts are, they're not anonymous fully, but they do have some identifying information on them, which again makes people a little bit weary. So if you do want to check out your Alexa privacy settings, it's there's a separate website that Amazon set up. It's called amazon.com/Alexa privacy settings. And if you go to amazon.com/Alexa privacy settings, that will take you to all of the privacy settings and, most importantly, where you can see a list of all of your recordings, all the things you've said to her, and then you can go through and delete those as well. So really interesting. I mean, I personally, I find this fascinating because while you may not think, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong in my house, whatever, the reality is it's kind of weird to think that someone has access to what you're saying in your private residence. And I get that for transcription, I get for like making these products better. At some point, some people do have to listen to these recordings, but I do like the idea of having the ability to delete things and have them gone. And I'm not sure at this point if that's ever truly the case. So you just have to be aware that this system is not foolproof, and it's very new. So it's still evolving. Got a message from Sue Vance, who wrote me on my website, richontech.tv. She said, is there a lens you can connect to a phone to have better quality and zoom in pictures? My phone is an Android, a Moto 5. First time on your site. Some really great info. Hoping to get the time to check it out. Thanks, Sue. So we did a story with a company that made the first lens, the first snap-on lens for the iPhone, called Olloclip. They are Olloclip. So Olloclip made the first snap-on lens. Oh gosh, this was a while ago. I think it was for the iPhone like 5. And we did a story, and the guy, just photography guy, and just wanted to make he loves the iPhone, big Apple fan, and just wanted to make it better and easier to have wide angle, macro, all kinds of different lenses. I mean, it started out, I think, with just like a sort of fisheye, and it's expanded way, way, way past that. So that's the biggest company, is Olloclip. You snap these things on. They used to start at $50. I think now they're like, you know, some of the nicer ones are $100. But you snap this onto your phone, and this one, they have support right now for the iPhone XR, XS, iPhone X, 8, 7, and SE. So they do not have, they were going to have, interesting, they still don't have Samsung. They were, oh, multi-device, here we go. They do have a multi-device. So there is a device that works with a clip that works with multiple devices and over many thin cases. So They do have that. And I think this would work on your device. So, Sue, I think that would work. It depends. Now, here's the thing. It all depends on where the lens is located on your phone. And here's the thing I figured out about these clip-on, because I was going to say, you can also go to Amazon and just search for something like clip-on phone lens. But the problem is, what I found with these clip-on lenses, you're going to use it once and you're never going to use it again. Because the problem is, and I'm not talking Oloclip, the ones that are made specifically for device, but the multi-device clips are very tricky because you have to seat these things on your camera lens just right, and you don't want them to move. If they move, you're going to have a black ring on the side of your photos, or you're going to have just some of the photo might be, there might be a blockage of the lens because this thing moves ever so slightly and then it's not perfectly centered on your lens. So I think these things are great. When I did the story with Oloclip, I had used it in the past and I used it for a while after that. And I think if you're a creator and you're trying to get different angles and you're trying to get, you know, your stuff to look different than everyone else's stuff, I think that these are fantastic. But for the average person that's just taking pictures and posting to Instagram and is not trying to stand out, you know, in front of the world, in front of everyone, then, you know, these things they kind of become unnecessary and they kind of end up in a drawer. So that's just kind of my overall advice. But look at the types of lenses they have with Oloclip now. They have fisheye, macro 7x, macro 10x, macro 14, 15, and 21x, telephoto 2x, telephoto 2x pro, wide angle intro, super wide pro, and ultra wide. So they have a lot to choose from if you want your pictures to look different. And again, if you're a creator, you're making videos, and you want to create everything right through your iPhone, these are going to be fantastic. Something like a Moto 5, it's going to be a little bit tougher because you need one of these clip-on lenses, and they just might not work as well with your phone. With that said, there's a lot of companies that make these things. Moment is another one, and they have lenses. And the secret with a lot of these companies is they're making cases that let you screw on the lens or clip the lens in a way that it does not move. So it's very fixed. And in that case, it's going to work fine. Then you have something else happening, which is the makers of the cell phones, the manufacturers like Samsung and Huawei and all these other companies and Apple, they're all making 2, 3, 4 lenses on phones now. So there's less of a need for separate lenses that you clip on. Because, for instance, on the Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus, you've got a wide angle, you've got your standard, and you've got a 2x zoom. On the OnePlus, you've got a 3x zoom, plus a wide angle, plus the standard. So again, a lot of times you don't need these with the new devices, which puts these makers in an interesting position. They're becoming more creator devices and more expensive because they're making them more premium and kind of giving you an advantage that you wouldn't get if you just used one of these cheap things or the included lens on the phone. Walmart has a new tablet that's just $64. And they sent me two of these tablets to check out. And one was an 8-inch tablet that's $64. These are Android tablets, obviously. Another one is a 10.1-inch tablet, which is just $79. So compare that to the price of the entry-level iPad, which is $329. You're talking a deal. Now, in general, I do not recommend Android tablets at all. I just don't even recommend them because they're so terrible, they're so cheap, and they just are not very good. When you look at the iPad, the beauty of the iPad is not just the design, but it's also the apps that you can get on the iPad. And because there's not a huge market for Android tablets, I'll get outside of the Amazon Fire tablets, and I'll get to that in a second, there's not that many good Android apps for tablets. And yes, you'll find some of the basic ones covered, but after that, it really goes downhill. Whereas with the iPad, you're getting really, really good apps that were developed for the iPad from a wide range of app developers. And so I generally recommend, and $329, I know sounds like a lot, but when you really do the math on an iPad, they can last 4, maybe even longer, years. And so when you do the math, divide it up, it's really not a bad deal. And you're getting a far superior product. Now, with all that said, the Walmart tablet is actually pretty good because it's an Android tablet that does the trick. It's just a simple tablet that lets you surf the web. It lets you watch videos. It lets you look at social media. And that's about it. You don't want to do much more on this device. Someone asked me, can you play Candy Crush? I downloaded Candy Crush to it. It works just fine. It wasn't hesitating. So you can play simple games on it as well. But again, that's where it ends. But for $64, not a bad deal. Now, what's the lifetime on this tablet? I'm not sure. I mean, it might last 2 years, 3 years, who knows, depending on how you use it. I will tell you that it's super slow right out of the box. So you're getting a pretty bad processor, 1.3 gigahertz quad-core processor. You're getting a screen that has 800 by 1280 IPS. You're getting cameras that are just a joke, a third of a megapixel on the front and 2 megapixels on the back. That's what I had, I think, on my Motorola Q back in, I think, like 2005 or 2003 or 2006, whatever it was. You're getting a phone that, or a camera that's just terrible. So don't buy this thing for the camera. 2 gigs of RAM, but also 16 gigs of storage. Now, the 16 gigs of storage I can look past because you are getting expandable memory on this device. You can just add an SD card and you'll be fine. But here's the beauty. They're running Android 9.0 Pie, which is the latest version of that operating system. The other thing I liked about this is that there's an FM tuner inside, so you can plug in headphones and just listen to the radio. There's not a lot of bloatware. So a lot of these cheap, what happens during the holidays, you see $50 tablets, $25 tablets. All these stores have tablets. Every store in America is selling an Android tablet for $50. They're all crap. And they have a lot of bloatware on them as well. This has almost no bloatware, but it does have a bunch of Walmart apps pre-installed. Walmart, Walmart Grocery, Walmart eBooks, Sam's Club, and Vudu. And there's even an extra little button at the bottom that brings you to those apps immediately, which I don't like. But again, the advantage of this tablet over Amazon's Fire tablet, which I would argue is probably slightly better, is that this has full access to the Google Play Store, which Amazon's tablets do not. Now, because they're Android, you can still sideload apps, which means you can put any app you want on there, but you have to go outside of the App Store, which is not an easy thing for most average people to do. So on the Walmart tablet, you get Google Play, you search for an app, any app that Google has available on Google Play, you can install on the Walmart tablet very quickly and very easily. So for that reason, I do like these tablets. And for $64, I think that is not too bad of a deal. Question again through email. This comes in through my website, richontech.tv, with a subject line, I can't send a fax. This is from Dory. She says, hey, Rich, I watch you on KTLA and I look forward to what new tech items you introduce us to, but I have a problem. I have an all-in-one HP. I can e-print from my cell and laptop, but since I switched my phone to Spectrum, I have not been able to send a fax. I've spoken with HP for remote help. Okay, I've had Spectrum over twice to check the setup. I haven't gotten any help, and each one points fingers at each other. The bottom line is, no dial tone is detected. I've Googled trying to find a solution. I've encountered numerous queries of frustrating folks just like me in search of help. Can you help me and others that struggle to do something simple like sending a fax, please? So, I have not sent a fax through a machine like this in a very long time. So my immediate thought is that because with Spectrum phone, you say you switched over, they're delivering phone service voice over IP. And the way that a fax machine works is over analog. So a fax machine takes an image, converts it into an analog waveform, and sends that waveform out over the regular phone line. The other fax machine listens to that waveform and then converts that back into something that is visible and printable, and they print out the image. So the thing that I see happening here is that Spectrum is doing voice over IP, which means there's no, I think at the end of the day, if your machine detected the dial tone, it would probably work, but because it's not detecting a dial tone, it's not going to work. So what my theory is here is that your HP printer is probably older and not equipped to handle VoIP faxing. And I did a quick little search about VoIP faxing, and it seems like it's hit or miss. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, depending on the setup of the machine and also the VoIP line. So I'll tell you what I use. I use something called HelloFax, and if you already have a cell phone and you're e-printing from there, what I would recommend is just scan whatever you need to fax through your smartphone, which do you have an iPhone? Yeah, you have an iPhone. So just scan on your iPhone, go into Notes, compose a new note, or you know what, just go ahead and get the app called Scannable, which is a great little app. You scan it through there and make a PDF out of it, do whatever you need to do, sign it, fill it out, whatever, and then you can send that through HelloFax and just download the PDF there, and it's very easy. That's what I use, and it's super simple. I looked up another one. There's, let's see, there's FaxBurner, which that also, that's free. So FaxBurner is free to send and receive faxes, and basically you get 25 pages inbound per month and 5 pages outbound, and they just give you a disposable phone number. You send your fax, it's on its way, and that's it. If you want to upgrade, if you need to do more, it's $10 a month. I know you probably don't want to pay that, so I wouldn't recommend that. And then eFax is the other one that was, man, remember when eFax came out? It was like such a big deal. That, of course, is still around, but clearly not as popular. But it's even more expensive. eFax Plus is $16.95 a month or $20 a month. Do they have eFax for free anymore? I don't even think they have a free. They might not even have a free service anymore. So if they don't, you might be able to sign up for a free trial and see if that works. But this was crazy. So I was at a doctor's office one time getting like a, I think it was an x-ray or something. Whatever it was, I needed the either a prescription or whatever, something that my doctor gave me, I needed to give to this x-ray clinic, right? And I didn't have it on me, but I scan everything into my phone. And so I said, well, can you accept a fax? And she said, sure. And I'd never done this before, but I actually downloaded an app on my Android phone, and it was called TinyFax. And I just found the document in Google Drive, and I said, okay, what's your number? I popped it into TinyFax, and it worked. It sent her the fax, and I said, can I just see it? I want to see what it looks like. I was so impressed with myself, and she was actually very nice, the receptionist, so she was playing along, and she was sharing my enthusiasm. She was like, that's pretty cool that you were just able to do that. I'm like, oh, nobody sends faxes from their phone? She's like, no, that's the first time I've seen that. But, you know, I'm the tech guy, so I love doing stuff like that. But I like having options. And so I get it. There are times when you still need to send a fax. There are definitely those little companies and transactions that require a fax machine. So again, check out HelloFax. That's one of my favorites. HelloFax, HelloFax.com is their website. Then you've got FaxBurner.com. And the app I used on Android was called TinyFax. I don't know. Do they have a TinyFax for iPhone? I don't know. Let's see if they do. I'm looking to see productivity. I don't know if they have one for, but I'm sure you can find one for iPhone. There's so many of these types of things for iPhone. So there you have it. Good question. I know faxes are going out, but there are still times when you need them. Speaking of the iPhone, this is a creepy new feature in iOS 13. So do you ever notice when you are FaceTiming and you're not really looking at the person on the screen? Like, you can't really make eye contact with them because you're looking at yourself or you're looking in the corner at their picture. So Apple is going to correct this with a feature called FaceTime Eye Contact Correction. And what this does is it uses augmented reality to literally lift your eyeballs up and make them look like you are looking at the other person. How creepy is that? So according to 9to5Mac, who tested it out, what this does, or they, I guess they looked at a report of it. I don't know if they actually tried it, but it makes real-time adjustments to the image of your eye so that you appear to be looking at the camera rather than the screen. This means you'll appear to be making eye contact. I mean, it's so weird. And this guy named Will Sigmund tweeted, and he raised and lowered a pair of frames, like eyeglass frames, over his eyes. And you could see the frame kind of bending up a little bit through augmented reality. So I find this super weird. I actually downloaded the beta of iOS 13. So I need to try this out, but it's super weird. Oh, Dave Shukin was the guy who tried it out. And it's just such, you got to look at his little demo. It took me a while to figure out what was going on. One of the developer notes that it might be limited to the iPhone XS and Max and XR, and it might not work on the iPhone X because it uses ARKit 3, which is the latest version of Apple's augmented reality tools. But it's a weird thing. And I get it. I mean, I feel like this is a problem with, I feel like in general, I'm just not a fan of FaceTime and all these video chats, because I feel like people are just not, you're not trained to look through a screen at someone else. It gets boring. When you're talking on the phone, you can talk on the phone for an hour. When I'm on a video call, I just feel the need to like get off the phone or, you know, just stop the call, because I just don't feel like I can go as long as I can on a phone call, on a video call. And maybe I'm the only one that feels that way, but I just, that's just the feeling I get when I'm doing this. Now, maybe that's because I'm not making eye contact with the person. And so maybe my body is thinking, well, this is not a face-to-face thing, so let's just finish this up. But maybe this will help. I don't know. Got a note from Kevin through my website. Kevin said the subject line was DJI Osmo Action. Please update your segment. The DJI Osmo Action does let you change screens with a verbal command along with other functions. Frank Buckley even suggested this option, and you still haven't updated the info on subsequent segments. Okay, I will take the good and take the bad. And Kevin, you have a good point. So I did miss this in my review of the DJI Osmo Cam. I reviewed this week, and the DJI Osmo Action Cam is basically a GoPro with a front-facing screen as well. So you've got two screens on the front and the back, and what that means is that if you want to vlog or just in general get yourself into the shot, you can just spin the camera around, and then you have the front-facing screen, and you can see yourself. And you can frame yourself up perfectly, which is a huge deal, especially if you're vlogging. If you're trying to vlog, or even if you're out with the family, you're on a ski trip or something, and you're using this action cam, and you just want to be in the shot, you can be in the shot now, because you can spin this thing around and see yourself. Well, my big problem with this feature was that it was clunky to actually see the front-facing screen, because you'd start out recording on the back screen, you know, holding the camera your typical way, and then you flip it around to the front, you have to either tap on the back screen twice with two fingers fast, and it took me a while to get the hang of that one, or you have to press this little side button for 2 seconds, press and hold that, and that flips around to the front screen, or you can use your voice. Now, I did not include the voice in there because I hate voice commands on these things, and I think they're very clunky, so I didn't even include it in there, but yes, you can use your voice, and it became this whole thing with Frank Buckley, our anchor here at KTLA, saying, Rich, they should just make it voice activated, and I should have said yes, but I said no. I said they should just make it so that the camera senses when you flip it around and aim it towards yourself, there's a little sensor inside that notices that and actually just flips the screen to the front screen. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to tackle this one, but Kevin, you're right. I did make a mistake on that one, and I did miss that in my report, but I didn't think that a lot of people would use that feature. Maybe they would, but you're right. It is good to list all of the options, especially when I'm critiquing it, so I get that. And duly noted. But overall, the DJI Osmo Action Cam, I'll give it the same review I give all these things that mimic your cell phone. Your cell phone is easier. All these little gadgets and doodads that you add to your phone or that you use, you know, in addition to your phone, at the end of the day, I find that it's just easier to use your phone. And that's what I found with the DJI Osmo Action Cam. If you're a snowboarder, skateboarder, surfer, action sports guy, gal, whatever, you're going to love this thing, and it's fantastic. But if you're just a regular person that is thinking they're going to use this on their vacation once a year, you're not, because when you go to Hawaii, you're going to use this thing once, and then you're going to realize that everything else, your battery's out, whatever, your phone is always charged, it works, it's always with you, and guess what? It's way easier to share videos from your phone than it is from one of these little cameras, because you got to transfer them somehow. So I always end up just defaulting to my phone, and that's kind of like, I feel like a lot of people are like that. These things, you buy them, the camera's $350, and next thing you know, it sits in a drawer, just like I talked about with those clips for the camera lens. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about buying some of these things. Even something as simple as a Bluetooth speaker. I mean, yes, when I'm out by the pool, I love having a Bluetooth speaker, but like 99% of the time, it's just easier to just put your phone really loud wherever you are. And, you know, if you're not having a giant party, it's really not that big of a deal. Use your phone. So again, it's like all these little things like microphones and stuff. It's like sometimes I just find it's easier just to use what's built into the phone. And I'm just giving you that advice because it might save you some money. All right, let's take a trip down memory lane real quick. The Walkman turned 40 this month, and I have very fond memories of the Walkman. My first one from Sony was a CD player. I'll never forget purchasing this from my friend's, I don't know if it was his uncle or something. I was in Florida on a family trip with them, and his uncle had a CD player from Sony, and he said, I'll sell it to you for $20. And I said, done. And I bought this thing, and you couldn't walk around with this thing not skipping for 5 seconds. I mean, you just the way they were back then. I put it in my car. I had to like mount it perfectly so that it wouldn't skip, and it just skipped all the time. You couldn't run with it. You couldn't do anything. Then I'm trying to remember what I did between that. That was high school and college. I don't really remember college too much with music, but I do remember out of college. As soon as I got out, I did have the Rio, which was. It was like Diamond Multimedia, I think. It was this little red player, and I thought it was so cool because you could add a memory card to it and have unlimited storage and MP3s and this and that. It was so great. Of course, transferring music to it was a pain, all that good stuff. Then, of course, I had newer CD players that didn't skip as much. I tried running with those. That didn't work. Then I got the mini disc player from Sony, and I remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is the future, because you knew how to mini disc that didn't skip as much, and I ran with that thing, and that was a pain. And I went through a whole bunch of iterations until I saw the iPad. A girl on the airplane next to me was using the brand new iPod. It was like one of those little iPod minis that they had in different colors. I think she had a pink one. And I saw that, and I said, oh my gosh, what is that? And she explained it was an iPod, and I said, oh my gosh, I'd seen commercials for it, and you know what? I'm buying this thing. And so I went out the next day and I totally bought an iPod mini for myself and my wife. I think they were $250 each at Best Buy. And that was it. That was all I needed to say goodbye to the whole Walkman and all my issues with running. And, you know, now, I mean, oh my gosh, if you keep going, now I've got the Apple. I mean, for a while I had my phone, which I'd run in a band, you know, around my waist. And now I literally walk out of my house with my AirPods in and my Apple Watch, and that's it. And I've got Apple Music on the watch, cellular on the watch, and the AirPods, and it's totally magical. And I think back 20 years to when I was using the CD player and the Rio and all the frustrations of these music devices and how easy it is now. We have come a long way since the Walkman launched 40 years ago. And it had its point in life. It had its place in life, but it just didn't... Sony just didn't get it right. I remember when Sony's music store came out compared to Apple's, and it was just a joke. You couldn't even do anything on it. It was such a pain to buy the music and a pain to transfer the music. And it was just one of those things where Apple did it right and it just worked. All right, one more question real quick before we go. Ms. Jean says, have you done the Apple beta update? It's actually really good, and on my Apple TV too. Yes, I did the beta update on my iPhone because I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to write my new book or not. I did start it a little bit, and I went through all the new features on the iOS 13, and I found 68 so far new features that are pretty compelling. And they did a nice job. They did a lot of stuff. Some of them are bigger than others, like share your ETA with people. I mean, you could do that in Google Maps forever. Let's see what else. Search and messages. That's easier now. Remember in messages in my first book, 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone, I talked about how you could search your messages, but you really can only search like one word at a time. So now messages is making it a lot easier to search. You've got Quick Path, which means you can swipe along the keyboard. So there's a lot of stuff. But yes, I have not installed it on the iPad. That's another project. And Apple TV, I don't know if I'll do it on Apple TV. But maybe I will, just to see what that's all about. Well, thanks so much for listening. That's going to do it for this show. Please subscribe if you haven't done so already. All you have to do is search Rich on Tech in your favorite podcast app. That's Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and Overcast. Those are a few of the good ones. Don't forget to sign up for my newsletter at richontech.tv. I send out a newsletter usually every week, and it includes all the stuff that I covered that week, all my little tidbits and things. Just easy to see, easy to browse through. All the links are there. So if you saw me talk about something on TV or on the radio or on my Instagram or on my Facebook, I put all the best stuff right there. So you can say, oh yeah, that's what Rich was talking about. Okay, perfect. This is usually the point in the show where I ask producer Megan how she liked it. I'm just going to speak for her and say that she did not like it because she was not in the show. So it definitely is a little bit tougher to do it myself, but I think I survived. All right, thanks so much for listening. I think that's going to do it. I'm Rich DeMuro. Have a fantastic day. I'll talk to you real soon.